If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Merkel Media.
Start looking at people like they don't matter. I'm waking up to the fact, more than a little bit shallow. I'm lost in this hole, but I don't wanna. I'm lost in this hole, 'cause I'm just trying to
good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas from Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? First off, I want to say a huge thanks to everyone who has been sharing the show and giving it a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen on. You have no idea how much this has helped the show grow over the last year and a half. And if you've been a listener of the show and haven't given it a 5-star review, go do that now. If you're new to the show, give it a listen, and if you love it, give it a 5-star review and share it with your friends and family. And make sure you're going to freetherabbits.myshopify.com. If you're looking for something like our new Faith Turns Promise into Prophecy, and I'm a Free Range Rabbit merchandise to represent being a free range rabbit around town. I love you guys. Now, let's get into the show. What's good, guys? We are back with part 2 of Nephilim Portal Babies, and our whole goal is to get to this third part where I explain my theory of what a Nephilim portal baby is. But to get there, we got to break down different aspects. And in part one, we broke down the origins of the Nephilim. Today, we're going to get into what is considered to be the oldest secret society that spawned out of Cain and his son Enoch. And this Enoch is not the Enoch that you know from the Book of Enoch or from the Bible in the sense of from Seth's line, but this would be from Cain's line and his first son. And we're going to get into his significance, how this ties into Thoth, Hermes, Hermes Trismegistus. We're going to get into all of these different Gnostic machinations as well, and what this means to the modern world and this idea of Nephilim portal babies. And I know right now we're just hitting all these different crazy areas, and it's not quite making sense yet, but it will by the time we get to part three. But today we're going to get into Legends of the Craft and these different ideas of who Enoch was in Masonic legends. And we will start with looking at the origins of Freemasonry. And we have to do that because this is where we get an idea of the Brotherhood of the Snake, which I will talk about towards the end of this episode. But again, to get there, we have to go to writings that were written by several very, very prominent Freemasons throughout history and what they have to say about Enoch, because what they are espousing now about Enoch and Freemasonry is not at all what was being said prior in these Legends of the Craft. And this is where we get the idea of these two Enochs and how the good Enoch, as we know him to be from the Book of Enoch, has now superimposed himself over this evil Enoch that was originally talked about in the Craft Legends. Now, it's funny, a lot of the more modern Freemasonic writers will actually denounce those writings as saying, oh, those were fanciful, they weren't correct, when in actuality, the guys that wrote those were some of the most prominent and highly regarded Freemasons in history. And to say that, oh, they just didn't know what they were talking about would be absolutely ludicrous. Now, the true origins of Freemasonry is unknown, and it's been lost in time. But there are several legends of the craft, which we'll talk about here. Obviously, we don't have time to talk about all the legends of the craft. And to that note, I'm going to be doing something new on YouTube starting out the new year. I will be putting out, in addition to the long form format, that'll never change with the long form show, but I will be putting out short form format episodes on the YouTube channel that will last anywhere from 8 minutes to 15 minutes, where I break down certain subjects in a short, digestible manner. And I probably will get into some of the legends of the craft on there, where I just break down one of the legends. And it's something you can consume easily, or you can actually go back and find if I'm talking about one of those things on the episode. You can go to those and say, oh, he did talk about it here. Let me refresh myself on what this particular thing is. So just a heads up, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcast, that won't be available here. That'll only be available on YouTube. So if you're looking to get some of the short form format content, that's where you want to go for that. But again, the Free the Rabbits podcast will continue on all platforms in long form format. So back to the origins of Freemasonry. So there are many historians that have all these different opinions of what's the real origin, what's not the real origin. And we have to kind of look at the different ones to say, okay, these are lining up together, and some of these build on other ones. So this is probably more in tune with what Freemasonry started with, or what they want us to think it started with. And Albert G. Mackey, and he was a 33rd degree Freemason, and he was an American medical doctor and author. And he's best known for tons of different books and articles about Freemasonry. And he was also a delegate to South Carolina's post-Civil War Constitutional Convention. And he was the body's president at the time. In 1844, he actually abandoned the practice of medicine so that he could specialize in the study of different languages. And he really dove into the Middle Ages and Freemasonry. And a part of learning all these different languages, he became very fluent in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. And he really dug into a lot of the Kabbalistic symbolism and Talmudic researches as part of this. He was also a grand lecturer and grand secretary of the Grand Lodge of South Carolina. And he was the secretary general of the Supreme Council of the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite for the Southern Jurisdiction of the United States. So again, this dude was top of the line of Freemason. So a lot of what he has to say holds weight, even when it comes to these legends, because he talks about a lot of these legends and what he thinks about them. And he actually expounds it in a way where he says, this is my take on this, almost like he's got his own legend, but not per se. And one of the things that he says about the origins of Freemasonry, the origin and source whence first sprang the institution of Masonry as we now have it, has given rise to more difference of opinion and discussions among Masonic scholars than any other topic in literature of the institution. So he's alluding to the fact that the modern Freemason has a different viewpoint on the origins than the original authors, which I find hilarious because the original authors were a lot older. So you would think that you would take on board more of what they have to say, but there's a reason why that the modern authors have tried to denounce some of this. Now, Mackey's not one of them, and we will talk about what Mackey has to say about these legends of the craft. Now, there's four main legends of the craft. We have first the Anderson theory, and there's two of these right now that I'm going to break down decently in depth, and two of them which I won't really talk about a whole lot outside of explaining what they are because they don't really hold a lot of weight to the conversation today because in essence they expound upon some of the earlier manuscripts that came out. So it's not much different than what you're going to hear in these two. Now, the Anderson theory is built on a Reverend Dr. James Anderson, and he was born in 1690. He died in 1739, and he was a Scottish writer and minister born and educated in Aberdeen, Scotland. And he was ordained a minister in the Church of Scotland in 1707 and moved to London, where he ministered to the Glasshouse Street congregation until 1710. And then he went to a Presbyterian church later in 1734. And then he went to Lyle Street Chapel until his death. So he's a minister this entire time. And his best known association, though, is with Freemasonry. So you may ask, whoa, this reverend was a Freemason? Well, you'll find that a lot of reverends are Freemasons, even in the modern world. Even when I was a part of a Freemasonic lodge, there were reverends within there. Now, I will say this, not all reverends are up to no good that are Freemasons. It goes back to what I've always said on this show about Freemason being a fraternity, and 99% of the guys in there don't even know what the tenets are really built on. They're just in there to be in a brotherhood and to help community. There's a lot of guys in there really just in there to help others. They're not in there to get some sort of status by nefarious means. That doesn't mean that the foundation of Freemasonry wasn't built on evil, because it was. It's built on occult practices. But most of the guys in there don't know that. However, I will say with Reverend Dr. James Anderson, he knew a whole lot and he was very high up in the Freemasonic lodges that he was in. As a matter of fact, he was master and grand warden of the Grand Lodge of London in Westminster. And it was later known as the Premier Grand Lodge of England. And that was in the 19th century as the United Grand Lodge of England. And he was also a member of the Royal Society. I've talked about the Royal Society on this show before, and not everybody that's in the Royal Society was a part of a secret society, but some of them were. And Anderson was also a friend of Isaac Newton. Now, we've talked about Isaac Newton a lot on this show, and I know that originally when I talked about Isaac Newton and what he thought about the Trinity, I was more open to the idea that he was a Christian that was trying to figure it out. I'm not saying that he wasn't, but the more you dig into him, the more I've dug into Isaac Newton. Gnosticism seems to be a very prominent theme with him, and the occult, specifically with his ties to the Priory of Sion, which I've gone into depth, and some of these other alchemical practices that he was involved in. So it's very interesting that we have Reverend Dr. James Anderson, who was a friend of Isaac Newton, and they were both in the Royal Society. So one of the things that the Grand Lodge commissioned him to do was write this book called The Constitutions of the Freemasons. And this was in 1723 when it was put out. And it was one of the most important works of the history of Freemasonry. As a matter of fact, said that it was law as far as Freemasons go, when he put this out. Now, again, modern Freemasons will go back and say, oh, the works were riddled with extravagant claims and all this incredulous information that can't be true. And one of those specific things we're going to talk about in some of these different legends that keep reappearing is this evil Enoch that the idea of Freemasonry actually came from. So that's the original idea. But again, it's been bogarted and changed since then to be this good Enoch that we know. And we're going to read some of the passages from these legends as we go. And speaking of Masonic writers and legends of the craft, there's a George Oliver, which we're going to talk about too, which is the Oliver legend, and he actually reprinted in his book, Golden Remains of the Ehrlich Masonic Writers, The Constitutions of Freemasonry by Anderson as well. So this has been regurgitated many times up until a point where they wanted to change the narrative of where Freemasonry actually came from. So we're going to get into Anderson's theory now, his legend of the craft, and this was first published in the Book of Constitutions. And to write this legend, Anderson drew heavily on the Record of Freemasons, which was a lost manuscript written at the end of the 15th century, and the legend of Euclid. And we're going to talk about Euclid today too. But there were two other manuscripts which were before that, that Halliwell and Robert wrote. And again, we were not going to talk about those today, but again, maybe in some short form format, I'll break down all these different legends of the craft and people can figure out what they want to from these legends. I'm just going to show you what these legends are in that format later on. So his legend, Anderson's legend, differed in many points from the previous ones. And this is where the shift starts to happen with Anderson, because his idea of Enoch being involved with this entire story is where it begins. Now, again, we've got these different legends, and even Freemasons themselves will tell you that, well, there's all these different legends and none of us knows the actual truth. But again, all these earlier legends are going to really push towards this one central theme. Now, Anderson's is a little bit more convoluted, in my opinion. It's a newer one. Again, we're going to go through it and you can make your own decision on what you think about it. So initially, he states that Adam had good knowledge of geometry and that made him the founder of masonry and architecture. And he taught these to Cain and his son Seth. Obviously, Abel was taken out by Cain, and then they taught them to their children. And as a result of this, masonry dates antediluvian. So this is before the flood, before Noah, before the ark, all of that. And subsequently, masonry was taught to Noah and his children. And then their heirs tried to build the Tower of Babel. And this is after the flood. And then God made them speak in different languages and dispersed them into the world. But it was preserved by Nimrod and the Chaldeans, and the Magi built many cities on the ideas of geometry and masonry in all of these different countries, which subsequently Abraham then brings the knowledges and the sciences to Egypt. And this is how the Egyptians learned masonry. And this is going to tie into Thoth, and we're going to get into Hermes down in Greek literature as well. And afterwards, Abraham brings these knowledges of these sciences from Egypt to his descendants, the Israelites, and they were the people of the Masons. So it's very interesting how Masonry has been shifted into this very good thing, which Masons are always going to espouse. But this is Anderson giving his take on this. So at this point, King Solomon has a beautiful temple built in Jerusalem with the help of King Hiram and Hiram Abiff. So Hiram Abiff's a big part of this, too. And this is Anderson's biggest contribution to modern Freemasonry, is the story of the Temple of Solomon and the rituals that were built on this idea of the craft legends. But he also introduces Nebuchadnezzar as a grand master who learned Masonry from the Jewish captives that were brought to Babylon. And from there, it trickles down to Zerubbabel, the leader of the Jews who built the second temple. And then from Palestine, Masonry goes into Greece, where philosophers like Pythagoras improve on it. And then we've got the work of Euclid in Egypt, which is also mentioned during this time. Then Masonry goes to Rome, and it trickles to Emperor Augustus. And then the Romans, when they left Britain, the Masonic arts start to fall apart. Nobody hears about them anymore. But then the kings of Scotland, and I've gone into a lot of this when we talk about the supposed bloodlines of Jesus. So I encourage you to go check that out. But this is where all these bloodlines come from. And the kings of Scotland encouraged Masonry from the beginning and allowed the Scottish Masons to have a Grand Master and a Grand Warden. So now we've got this trickling into more modern day with what Anderson is espousing now in his Anderson theory. Now, as far as Enoch's ties to Freemasonry, there's not any written Masonic interest in Enoch until after the Grand Lodge of England's establishment in London between 1716 and 1718. And you know the constitutions that Anderson wrote was in 1723. So he talks about, in footnotes, the account of Enoch's pillars, that Enoch ascribed all science on marble and brick to survive the flood. And we're going to get into the legends of the pillars because there's many different ones. But there's pre-Grand Lodge knowledge that was written that indicates that Enoch was a reconstitution of Hermes, who discovered the pillar before the flood by Jabal. And we're going to talk about Lamech and his sons, Tubal-Cain, Jubal-Jabal. They're very important to this story, too, because this is all about where Freemasonry actually came from. And it spirals all the way back to Cain and his son, Enoch, because they were the first builders. So in a nutshell, that's Anderson's theory. Now we've got the Prestonian theory. And William Preston, he was a Scottish author, editor, and lecturer born in Edinburgh in 1742. And his craft legend built upon what Anderson had already put out, but he presented it in a clearer way. So in essence, his wasn't much different than what Anderson's was. And again, this was more about bringing this good Enoch to the forefront as being the perpetrator of Freemasonry from the beginning. And this ties into Enochian knowledge, which we'll talk about today too. Then we've got William Hutchinson, and he was an English lawyer, antiquary, and topographer. And he was initiated into Freemasonry on June 1770, and he eventually became the worshipful master of Barnard Castle Lodge of Concord. And he's a founding master of Lodge number 461 in Raby. And he wrote a book called The Spirit of Masonry, and it gained him the title of Father of Masonic Symbolism. So this guy was deep into symbolism, and he created the Hutchinson theory, which was a little bit different than some of the other theories. And he actually deviated from the idea that Hiram Abiff was not a Mason. And that's very important to Masonic lore now. But he puts him as a painter and a sculptor, and he was not actually a master mason or a builder. So he said the third degree symbolizes the corruption and death of religion and the moral resurrection of man in the new Christian doctrine. Again, I use Christian loosely here. And that's why when you complete the third degree and become a master mason, they call it being raised. You are now raised into the lodge. You have died, and now your new self has been raised into the lodge. So Hutchinson said the legend of Hiram Abiff is false, and he denies the legend of the third degree of the temple, which meant that Masons in general do not follow Hutchinson's theory at all. Actually throw it out. But again, very, very high degree Freemason who wrote many books on Freemasonry, understood symbolism better than most of the Freemasons around him. So he probably knew a little bit about what he was talking about. And again, these legends in many ways are very convoluted to the point that we don't actually know what the truth is. And that's why we have to look at history and look at what some of these characters in the stories actually mean to find out specifically when we match it up to the Bible, what actually was going on. So then we get to the Oliverian theory, and this is based on George Oliver, which I just spoke about. And he was an English cleric, schoolmaster, topographer, and writer on Freemasonry. Matter of fact, that's his biggest contribution to the world is his writings on Freemasonry. And he was on the board at Trinity College in Cambridge. So he went through Trinity College in Cambridge. And if you'll know anything since I've started this show, Trinity College in Cambridge is very important for a lot of absolute geniuses throughout history that have come out of there, and a lot of guys that were in secret societies and occult organizations and mystery schools also came out of there, Aleister Crowley being one of them as well. So we know of many of these different names. And guess what? George Oliver was another one. And another interesting fact about George Oliver, he was a reverend and a doctor as well. And another thing he brought to the forefront was to show that Masonry wasn't just a social club that was based on these ideas of brotherly love, but it was above all a philosophy and a science of symbolism, which ethics was taught to the initiates. So Freemasonry was a school of inquirers after truth. So he said that guys that come in here, this shouldn't just be a social hour. We're here to learn. We're here to advance the knowledges, not just for the upper tier people that are in this secret society, but everyone should be trying to seek and obtain knowledge, which I don't think you ever achieve that because, again, I think for the most part, it is a social club. And I don't think most of the guys in there have a clue, probably even any of the legends of the craft. I don't think many of them even know what those legends are. He claims in his theory that Masonic science existed before the creation of the earth, which I absolutely agree with as far as the sacred sciences, which we're going to talk about because those are not evil. They were just corrupted by these secret societies like the Brotherhood of the Snake, and it trickles all the way down to all the rest of them through these fallen angels. But he said that in the Garden of Eden, Adam was taught the science of Masonry, and he remembered it when he had to leave Eden because of him and Eve sinning, and his son Seth and his descendants preserved the sciences, whereas his brother Cain, check this out now, and his descendants abandoned it. The children of Lamech, a descendant of Cain, had some distorted knowledge of Masonry. So then he kind of pops in and says, well, actually, we've got Lamech, a descendant of Cain, which that's where Tubal Cain comes from too, these builders, and they had this distorted knowledge. Now, he says Cain's descendants were operative Masons, but Seth's were speculative, although they did erect buildings too. But the operative Masons were the ones that built with their hands, and they used this Masonry that was passed down from God to Adam, and they used it in an operative manner, whereas Seth and his bloodline used it in more of a spiritual manner. And I'm not against the idea of the sacred sciences being used differently by a evil line and then a good line by any stretch. I've said many times that if we looked at Adam, if we looked at Enoch, if we looked at Methuselah, if we looked at Noah, all of those guys, that we would say that they were alchemists. Most people would see them and what they did, and they would look at it as magic. Not that it was magic in an occult manner. You had this other side, this evil side that corrupted it. So you've got two sides simultaneously running. They're both using the seven sciences, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, and they were using them differently. That's why we've got astronomy and then astrology and these different inversions of the seven sciences. But according to Oliver, Seth was the first Grand Superintendent of the Craft, and then Enoch followed him. Now, this is the good Enoch that's coming out of Seth's line. This is what he's saying now. And he said, God revealed the sacred word of Enoch as well as some other mysteries. Enoch also erected two pillars on which he engraved the known sciences of his days, including masonry. And Enoch was followed by Lamech, then Noah, which there is a Lamech on Seth's side too. It's very interesting, the lines of Seth and the line of Cain. You'll see names that are the same or similar. And I believe that you've got a nefarious side that's tried to bogart the ones on this side to muddle history and to try to say that, oh, no, the good is the bad and the bad is actually the good. The inversion tactic that's as old as time, right? And according to Oliver, the primitive or this antediluvian masonry was organized in the lodges and was governed by only five grandmasters, Adam, Seth, Enoch, Lamech, and Noah. And it's interesting that he keeps sliding in Lamech on the good side when Lamech is very important to Freemasonry on the other with some of these craft legends. And we're going to get into that and why that this all spawns from this evil Enoch and what they were using Freemasonry to actually achieve. And this is where these Nephilim bloodlines come out of when we're talking about Lamech on Cain's side that also spawns out from this evil Enoch. Now, these Enochian pillars, and we're going to get into the pillars, and we're even going to talk about Josephus talking about these pillars coming from Adam and Seth too, which I found interesting. And well, I talk about Josephus a lot on this channel too. So I do believe there were some pillars, could have been multiple pillars though. And I don't think that what God gave Adam and this subsequently went through Seth's line was meant to be hidden. I think that it was probably carried by Noah. And I'm not saying that things weren't written on pillars. It's very possible. But it does seem like that on this negative side of Cain, they knew that this flood was coming. Matter of fact, there are many ideas throughout history that Cain and his son Enoch knew that the flood was coming long before it happened, and they were preparing for that. So they wanted to hide these knowledges so that after the flood, when the human race started reproducing and growing again, when fallen angels of that time were pushing mankind to find these things, find these knowledges, they would find these pillars and then they would use them to advance civilization into a very negative place, which I think we're moving more into now. And I think it's because of these alchemical pillars that were passed from Enoch of this negative side of Cain. Now, back to the Oliver legend. He says one of Enoch's pillars, and he's talking about the good Enoch now, again, the first one was found and the knowledges of science and masonry was transmitted through Noah's son, Shem. Now, the other sons lost the knowledge and all their descendants became idolaters because of this. But on the other side, the mysteries or spurious Freemasonry became this system of secret rites. And this operative art started rising up in opposition to the pure Freemasonry of Shem's. It's interesting, though, that this operative art is looked at as negative, but yet it's tied directly into Freemasonry today. And we're going to find out exactly why it's tied in today, because Moses revives the Masonry because he learns the negative kind when he is raised in Egypt. And then he revives the good Freemasonry and his understanding of the negative and the good. He understands that, oh, this is the good that we need to use and pass through the Israelites. Well, as we trickle on down to Solomon, because Solomon's very important to this too, when he's building his temple, who were adepts of the negative side of Freemasonry, which is the operative side of architecture, Solomon decides to reunite the two masonries into the form we know today. So this brings this idea of duality really into existence when it comes to Gnosticism, when it comes to the occult, because here's Solomon. He is the wisest man on earth, and the good side of Freemasonry has been passed down through Moses into the Israelites, which Solomon was also taught. But then because of some of the builders that were helping build the temple that knew this negative side, he decides that I need to bring the two together because this is the ultimate form of Freemasonry, because we have to have the good and the light. We have to know both. And this lends into everything I talk about when it comes to Gnosticism and how dangerous it is, because according to this legend that Oliver says, that both of these are brought together by Solomon. Now, did this actually happen with Solomon when Solomon was deep, deep into paganism and the occult? It's possible, but I will say that it's one of the things we don't know about, and it is just one of the legends of the craft, but the significance is what they're trying to show you, this duality, that Freemasonry is built on duality, much like any other mystery school that has been around since the dawn of time. So I know you're probably asking, what are the seven sciences? Because I brought this up a couple times already. Well, you may know them as the seven liberal arts, and many people may know these as grammar, logic, rhetoric, arithmetic, geometry, which is the most important to the Mason, music, and astronomy, or astrology, which is the inversion of that. So these are the seven sciences that were taught to Adam from God, which I absolutely believe. I believe that the mysteries that we would consider mysteries were taught to Adam. And I believe that in antediluvian times, and even after the flood, that early man had a different grasp on what these seven sciences were as far as their interaction with the spiritual world around them. Now, I do think that the negative side of it has found a way to twist it in conjunction with these fallen entities. And this is what we've seen today. This is the mysteries that you have to go through all of these different initiations to be able to get access to these levels or powers or whatever the secret society or occult organization is offering, right? They're all a little bit different, even though that they are similar in some ways. And this plays into Enoch 8, which I've read a million times on this show. And it talks about Azazel teaching men how to make swords and daggers, shields, breastplates. We know about Amezarek, who's teaching how to cast spells and cut roots, and Amoros, the release of spells, and Brachiel, the astrologers, and Kokobel, the portents, and Tamiel taught astrology. And this is where we get this idea from, where these fallen entities, these watchers, taught mankind how to twist these seven sciences. And Albert Mackey, who we were talking about earlier, in his book, History of Freemasonry, he breaks down the seven sciences and he calls them the seven liberal sciences. And he says that geometry is the most important one. And he says that all seven liberal sciences are founded by one science, that is to say, geometry. And this may a man prove that the science of the work is founded by geometry, and that a man teacheth and measure ponderation and weight of all manner of things on earth. For there is no man that worketh any science, but he worketh some met or measure, nor no man that buyeth or selleth. He buyeth or selleth by some measure or by some weight. And all of this is geometry. And he talks about where these worthy sciences were first begun, specifically geometry. And he says, before Noah's flood, there was a man called Lamech, as is written in the Bible of Genesis, and Lamech had two wives, and the one hight Ada and the other hight Sela. By his first wife Ada, he got two sons, that one Jabal and another Tubal, and by that other wife Sela, he got a son and a daughter. So this is not the Lamech on Seth's side. This is the Lamech on Cain's side, and this is the Lamech that is the son of Methusael. Now, again, this isn't Methuselah, but Methusael. He has two wives, Ada and Zillah, and Ada has Jabal and Jubal, and then Zillah has Tubal-Cain, and he took the name Cain from the original Cain, because Cain was the original builder, and then Naamah, and we know of Naamah, who produced Nephilim. So this is for sure, guys, not coming from bloodline of Seth. This is coming from the bloodline of Cain and this evil Enoch, which is the son of Cain. So this is directly from Albert Mackey's mouth, where he's talking about the seven sciences and where he says they actually come from. He's talking about Lamech on the evil Cain's side. And he talks about the third brother, Tubal-Cain, found smithcraft of gold, silver, copper, iron, and steel. And the daughter found the craft of weaving. And these children knew well that God would take vengeance for sin, either by fire or water, where they wrote their science that they had found in two pillars of stone, that they may be found after Noah's flood. And that one stone was marble, for that would not burn with fire, and the other stone was clept lanterns and would not drown in water. So let me ask the question, these children of Lamech, apparently according to Albert Mackey, full of sin, but they're the ones that passed on the seven sciences of Freemasonry to people after the flood, which also passed on Masonry to what we now know it as. So again, guys, when you're looking at some of these early writers, again, some of them, like Anderson and Oliver, they will slide some language in and try to make it out to be this good Enoch. But if we go to most of these earlier writers, they are talking about where they said that Masonry came from. And it's not from Adam. It's not from Seth. It is from this line of Cain and this evil Enoch. Now, earlier we talked about Abraham and his wife Sarah. When they went to Egypt, they brought these seven sciences to Egypt. And Albert Mackey talks about this here as well. And he said there was a scroller named Euclid, and he learned the seven sciences from Abraham, and he passed them on to the king there in Egypt. And Euclid, it's very interesting, it was an ancient Greek mathematician from 300 BC, and he was a geometer and a logician, and he's considered the father of geometry. And he's chiefly known for the Elements Treatise, which established the foundations of a geometry that largely dominated the field until the early 19th century. Now, sometimes he is mixed up with the early philosopher Euclid of Megara, and he was a Greek Socratic philosopher, but it's not him. Now, he was from a little bit earlier time than the Euclid, who was considered the father of geometry, because he was born in 435 BC. So that's where some of the mix-up comes from. But according to Mackey, that Euclid gave this science from the seven sciences the name geometry. This is where it comes from, was from Euclid. Now, we know him as the father of geometry. So it's not a stretch to say that he was the first that brought this to the forefront to humans. He goes a little bit further and talks about King David, who began the temple when he became king. And he said that David loved Freemasons and cherished them much. And he gave charges in the manners he had learned of Egypt given by Euclid. So Euclid's connected now to King David. Again, this is all what Mackey's saying. I'm not sitting here saying that I believe this. I'm just trying to tell you what the Freemasons are trying to push out. But after David dies, Solomon sent after Masons from all different countries and lands and gathers them together. And he had 80,000 workers of stone, and they're all called Masons. And out of them, 3,000 were ordained to be masters and governors of his work. And from another region, he found a king called Hiram, and he loved King Solomon, and he gave him timber for his work. And after this temple was built, Solomon makes worthy that the science of Masonry is confirmed in the country of Jerusalem and many other kingdoms. So again, this goes back to this idea that everything comes out of Solomon as far as how modern Freemasonry and the rituals and rites were created. Again, they believe that Freemasonry came many thousands of years ago in antediluvian times, but the actual tenets of Freemasonry were founded by King Solomon and the building of the temple and the rituals and rites that espoused out of that. Let's get into some evil Enoch. When I first came across the idea of evil Enoch, it was in the Genesis 6 conspiracy by Gary Wayne, who does a fantastic job of talking about the connections between evil Enoch and the seven sciences and some of these legends of the craft. that really got me started on my chase on what a lot of this actually meant as well. So if you are looking for a book to read to find out some of these ideas that I'm talking about today, definitely go check that out. It's a fantastic book. Where we get in the Bible this other Enoch, we have to go to Genesis 4:17. Cain lay with his wife and she became pregnant and gave birth to Enoch. So we know he had a son named Enoch. And we know how the line projects from there. Then Cain built a city and named it after his son Enoch. So the first city was called Enoch as well. Now, Enoch was born to Irad, and Irad was the father of Mahujael, and Mahujael was the father of Methusael, and Methusael was the father of Lamech. Lamech married two women, one named Ada and the other Zillah. Ada gave birth to Jabal, and he was the father of those who dwell in tents and raise livestock, and his brother's name was Jubal, and he was the father of all who play the harp and the flute. And Zillah gave birth to Tubal-Cain, a forger of every implement of bronze and iron, and the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, wives of Lamech, listen to my speech. For I have slain a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold. So that gives you an idea of the bloodline of Cain and the people involved with that. So this goes back to what Albert Mackey was talking about. We know biblically, Enoch that comes from Cain, there is an Enoch, and he's not good. And we also know that this Lamech that had two wives, Ada and Zillah, who had Jabal, Jubal, Tubal-Cain, and Naamah, were not good either. And this is where Freemasons, especially many of the earlier manuscripts and what they originally thought they said came from. It was not from this good Enoch that they've tried to bogart in and tried to twist into Hermes Trismegistus and Hermes and Thoth. And we're going to get into that a little bit here too, because that's important, because Freemasons do talk about Hermes. They're not the same. And if we want to say there's an Enoch that would be tied into these names, it would be the evil Enoch. It would be Cain's son. So traditionally, Enoch, Hermes, and Thoth are not the same person. They are tied into mystical and spiritual traditions as a singular figure called Hermes Trismegistus. Now, Thoth is the ancient Egyptian god of writing, wisdom, and magic. Hermes is the Greek messenger god, and he's also tied into commerce, knowledge, and learning. He can be a trickster. The same with Thoth. He can also be a trickster as well. Now, Thoth is generally seen with the head of an ibis bird, but sometimes with the head of a baboon. But Enoch, who is tied into knowledge, spiritual enlightenment, and his ascent to heaven, because he literally walks into another dimension with God, takes his body with him. That's why they try to tie in the good Enoch in with them. And it's a classic tale of what Satan's done, twisting and manipulating things that are good into things that are evil. And I will talk a little bit about Thoth in a little bit, about who I think Thoth is. And I've already alluded to this or talked about this before in the King's List Old Earth episode, but we'll talk a little bit more about it today. This legendary figure, the blending of Thoth and Hermes, who we just talked about, is Hermes Trismegistus. And he's the legendary author of works like the Emerald Tablet. And Trismegistus means thrice greatest. And he was considered the greatest philosopher, priest, and king. So there's your thrice. I'm going to suggest today that the thrice greatest is not indicative of him being the greatest philosopher, priest, and king. And not because he was seen as the symbol of wisdom and conduit of hidden knowledge between the divine and human realms, but because thrice greatest really meant that it was three different people. And that's a very interesting concept as well. But Enoch is also tied into Hermes Trismegistus and the prophet Idris from the Quran, which is supposedly the biblical Enoch when it comes to Islamic traditions. So what spawns out of Hermes Trismegistus is Hermetica. And Hermetica is a variety of treatises. And these are formal, extensive, and systematic work that is written thoroughly and explains and discusses the principles of a specific subject. So a treatise can be anything that's written that thoroughly explains a subject. That's the best way that I can break that down for you. So if I'm using the word treatise or treatises, you'll know what I'm talking about. But in this variety of treatises, It deals with astrology, medicine and pharmacology, alchemy, magic, and the oldest were written in Greek, and they supposedly go back to the 2nd or 3rd century BC. And the most famous of these was the Emerald Tablet. Now, these are not the Emerald Tablets of Thoth the Atlantean that were written by Maurice Doreal in the mid-1900s, which talks about these race of serpent-headed men. And maybe I'll do an episode on that. I've talked about that book before. But no, we're talking about the Emerald Tablet, the Smaragdine Table. And it is a cryptic text traditionally attributed to the legendary Hellenistic figure Hermes Trismegistus. And the earliest versions were actually in Arabic. And they are these mystical and alchemical treatises. They were between the 8th and 10th centuries AD. And they talk about the secrets of creation, the secrets of secrets. And as a matter of fact, an English version that was put out very early on by Isaac Newton. So there's Isaac Newton popping up again and rearing his ugly head when it comes to these Gnostic texts. But in a nutshell, that is what Hermetica is. And that's what spawns out into Hermeticism. And that's just this system of esoteric knowledges. And that's alchemy, astrology, and mystical and occult traditions throughout history. And this all spawns from the Hermetica, which is attributed to Hermes Trismegistus. But again, we don't really know where this conglomeration of papers and treatises actually came from or who wrote them. Now, we can suggest some things today. Again, this is what we're told, Hermes Trismegistus. So to get into where does this evil Enoch rear his head in the idea of Freemasonry? Because it's important. Because I just brought up Thoth, Hermes, I brought up Hermes Trismegistus, and you're saying, well, why did you bring up those names if we're talking about Enoch? Well, it's important because Enoch is said to be Thoth, is said to be Hermes. Hermes Trismegistus is said to be the combination of at least two of them when it comes to Hermes and Thoth, but Enoch is oftentimes slid in there too because he's attributed to be one, if not both of those. So it's important that we bring up all of these different gods and figureheads, because I believe that there's an answer for it. And we might not get to the bottom of it today, but I don't think that is anything good. And again, it's back to these gods or these godheads that are giving mankind hidden knowledges that were not supposed to be given to us, but were the game, right? That's the shell game. Well, the creator God, he's actually evil. So I'm here to help you and give you the knowledge that he won't give you because he's a bad, evil God. And you can be a God yourself, essentially. So to get back to good old Albert Mackey, we've been talking about him a lot today. So he talks about the legend of Enoch, and he's talking about the one that's fifth from Seth. This is his take on how that this good Enoch gets integrated into the legends of the craft. And he says, I shall first present the reader with the Masonic legend and then endeavor to trace out the idea which it was intended to convey. So he's letting you know, I'm going to tell you what's being said now, and then I'm going to tell you what I know. And he says, the legend is accepted by the craft. He's talking about Enoch from a time hereafter to be referred to runs to the following effect. So he talks about Enoch being inspired by the Most High, and he has this vision, and he constructs underground in the bosom of Mount Moriah an edifice, and it consists of 9 brick vaults. And then he creates a triangular plate of gold to be made, each side of which was a cubit long. And he enriched it with the most precious stones, engraved upon it the ineffable name of God. He then encrusted the plate upon a stone of a gate of the same form, which he placed upon a cubical stone of marble and deposited the whole within the 9th or innermost vault. So the 9th vault contains this triangle, this pyramid. When the subterranean building was complete, Enoch made a slab or door of stone and attaching it to a ring of iron by which it might, if necessary, be raised, he placed it over the aperture of the utmost ark and so covered it over with soil that the opening could not easily be discovered. Enoch himself was not permitted to enter it more than once a year, and on his death or translation, all knowledge of this building and of the sacred treasure which it contained was lost until in succeeding ages it was accidentally discovered while Solomon was engaged in building a temple above the spot on the same mountain. So he's saying that these secret knowledges that the good Enoch put in these nine vaults that he was allowed to go in once a year, that Solomon found them when he was building the temple over it. It's interesting, though, because there are other legends of the craft that say what? That Lamech's sons, Jubal and Jabal, take these pillars and hide them. And then they were found later on by Harmarnes, which is one of the early names for Hermes. So we're getting into trickery. Now, again, Mackey's just telling you up front what's being told now. He does go into what he thinks after this. So I'm just giving you what he's saying up front. Now, Mackey goes on to say, the legend proceeds to inform us that after Enoch had finished the construction of the nine vaults, fearing that the principles of the arts and sciences which he had assiduously cultivated would be lost in that universal deluge of which he had received a prophetic vision, and we know this from the book of Enoch, that he had received the prophetic vision of the flood that was coming. So he knew about this long before the flood happened. He erected above ground two pillars, one of marble to withstand the destructive influences of this flood, and one of brass to resist the action of the water. The pillar of brass, he engraved the history of the creation, the principles of the arts and sciences, and the doctrines of speculative masonry, the spiritual masonry, as they were then practiced. And on the pillar of marble, he inscribed in hieroglyphic characters the information that near the spot where they stood, a precious treasure was deposited in the subterranean vault, this gold pyramid, this gold triangle. Now, interestingly enough, when they go into what the hieroglyphics were, they said that it was the first time that Enochian was written down on any pillar. I find that fascinating too. And again, I'm not saying that Enochian language doesn't exist in a good format as far as angelic language goes. But what I am saying, though, that when man's using it, never good. And Mackey will explain after he says what the Masons of his time were saying about Enoch and how he got Bogarted into this role, where he knows that the story actually comes from. And I find the idea of the pillars interesting too, because we know in Freemasonry, there are two pillars called Boaz and Jachin, and they're the names of the two large bronze pillars that stood at the entrance of King Solomon's temple. So, I mean, we know that there were two pillars, supposedly according to legend of the craft, and Mackey's talking about, that King Solomon found and had these knowledges on them, and they were brought up by King Solomon. And it's very interesting that we have two pillars, one called Jachin, which means he will establish, and Boaz, which means in him is strength. And together, their names symbolize God's promise to establish his presence in the temple, and all strength comes from him. And we know of these verses from 1 Kings 7:15 through 22. And the Bible breaks down specifically what these pillars were. And we know from verse 21, and he set up the pillars in the porch of the temple, and he set up the right pillar and called the name thereof Jachin, and he set up the left pillar and called the name thereof Boaz. So this is biblical. These pillars were a part of the temple. We got to look at the trickery. We got to look at what Freemasons are doing. And I just thought the correlation between two pillars with secret knowledges and the two pillars of Freemasonry, which are Boaz and Jachin, are very similar in the sense of their importance. Mackey then says, after breaking down what Freemasonry has now bogarted Enoch to being, he says, such is the legend of Enoch, which forms a very important part of the legendary history of the high degrees. As a traditional narrative, it is not the slightest support of authentic history. So he's saying, hey, what everybody's saying about Enoch in Freemasonry, it doesn't have any authentic history. He says, and the events that it relates do not recommend themselves by an error probability, but accepted as the expression of a symbolic idea, it is undoubtedly possesses some value. So it's a symbolic gesture. Sure, we'll use it. But he says that part of the legend which refers to the two pillars is undoubtedly a perversion. He says, taking the good Enoch is a perversion of the old craft legend of Lamech's sons, which had already been treated in this work. It will need no further consideration. This idea of Enoch doing it needs no consideration. This came from the evil line of Cain, the subsequently evil Enoch, and all the way down to Lamech and Jubal, Jabal, Tubal Cain. This is where the pillars came from, the knowledges that were hidden. So this idea that Solomon finds these pillars, I don't know. But it seems to me that these pillars were found long before that, and the idea of them coming from the good Enoch just doesn't even hold weight within the secret society of Freemasonry. As a matter of fact, Mackey goes on to say further, there is no allusion to this story in the legend of the craft. None of the old manuscript constitutions contain the name of Enoch, nor does he appear to have been deemed by the medieval Masons to be of the worthiness of the craft. So again, Enoch's name's not in there. Lamech, Tubal-Jabal, Tubal-Cain, Naamah, they are the ones that are, in essence, the inscribers of all of these Masonic knowledges that are put on these pillars that are hidden away, that were resurfaced again and then carried on the structure of Freemasonry after the flood. Well, we can deem the fact that it came from Cain and his son Enoch because they came from his line. And this is where the idea of who this Enoch is really that they're talking about. It's not this good Enoch from the book of Enoch and from Seth's line. And he says, the Enoch spoken of in the Cook manuscript is the son of Cain and not the seven patriarchs. So I'm going to read some from the Cook manuscript. And Matthew Cook is a very notable figure associated with Freemasonry in Canterbury. And he was a Masonic scholar. And he first published the early 15th century manuscript of the Old Charges. And it was known in his honor as the Cook Manuscript. And it was commonly known against these Freemasons during that time as the Cook Manuscript because it was first given to the public by that distinguished brother. And it was published by him in 1861. And its original is in the British Museum, purchased it. Let's look at what the Cook Manuscript has to say. This is where we find out what Enoch they're really talking about. And again, Mackey supports the Cook Manuscript on what it has to say. He just literally broke down Freemasons are trying to change it into, and he said it's perversion. No, let's talk about what we really know it came from. So Cook Manuscript, I'm going to read from it. Adam's line, lineal son, descending down the seventh age of Adam before Noah's flood. There was a man that was named Lamech, which had two wives, one Ada and the other Zillah. By the first wife, Ada, he begat two sons, the one Jabal and the other Jubal. The elder son Jabal, he was the first man that ever found geometry and masonry, and he made houses, and is named in the Bible, that is to say, father of men dwelling in tents, that is, dwelling houses. And he was Cain's master mason, and a governor of all his works, and he made the city of Enoch. That was the first city. That was the first city that was ever made, and that made Cain Adam's son, and gave it to his own son Enoch, and gave the city the name of his son, and called it Enoch. And now it is Ephraim. So that's the old city that we know as Ephraim. And this is the original name of it, Enoch. And there was the science of geometry and masonry first occupied for a science and for the craft. And so we may say it was the cause and foundation of all crafts and sciences. And also this man, Jabal, was called Pater Pastorum. So Jabal builds this first city for Cain in the honor of his son Enoch, according to the Cook Manuscript. So this is where Masonry actually comes from. Cain, Enoch, and it trickles all the way down to Lamech and Tubal-Jabal, Tubal-Cain, where Masonry flourishes. But you got to understand, this is when the Nephilim were running wild. This is when my personal belief, the technology was running wild in those days, albeit very differently than what we see now. I know we think of technological advancements and we think about how we view it in a modern world. I just think that it was a highly advanced civilization, but it would look vastly different than anything we know of today. And I believe that we have at least proof, again, from early Freemasons of where Freemasonry actually came from. And again, Mackey's saying, listen, it's not the Enoch that we're trying to espouse now, but all of the old manuscripts, the old legends say Masonry flourished under Lamech's sons, which we know from the Cook manuscript ties all the way back to Cain and his son Enoch. And Mackey says, it is true that Enoch has been supposed to have been identical with Hermes and Idris among the Hebrews. He's been called Enoch among the Egyptians, Osiris and Hermes, and he was first who, before the flood, had any knowledge of astronomy and geometry. But the authors of the Legend of the Craft are hardly likely to be acquainted with this piece of archaeology, and the Hermes, to whom, with a very corrupt spelling, they refer as the son of Cush, was the Hermes Trismegistus, popularly known as the father of wisdom. So now we're tying it into Hermes Trismegistus, the Hermarnes, which you'll see in early craft legends how they spell Hermes, is really tying into Hermes Trismegistus, which they say is the son of Cush. So very convoluted on what they exactly think, but this is out of Mackey's mouth who he believes that these are. And he doesn't believe that the good Enoch has anything to do with this, as a matter of fact. You'd think he would be pretty invested as a Freemason to believe that, but some of these early Freemasons were sticklers to stick to what they knew had been passed down through generations. And again, these writings weren't widely known at the time. So Mackey expounds upon what we talked about earlier on the Anderson theory, and he talks about the constitutions that Anderson wrote. And remember, we talked about Anderson. He's one of the first ones to really bring in that Enoch was good. He alludes to it. And he says, expert and bright, both in the science of the art of geometry and masonry, an abridgment of which he placed on the pillars which he had erected. And he also said the old Masons firmly believed this tradition. Now, Anderson says this in his second edition of the Constitutions. Here's the best part. This is what Mackey's got to say about it. He says, but as there is no appearance of any such traditions in the old records, of which since his date, a large number have been recovered, for in them, the buildings of the pillars is ascribed to what? The sons of Lamech. So he says, Anderson's wrong. The new guys coming out with this stuff, the Enoch they're talking about is not the Enoch we've been talking about. And matter of fact, the pillars that this was written on was not. So let's get into the pillars a little bit more too, because Mackey goes into the fact that there are pillars that are ascribed to either Seth or Enoch, and that came from the authority of Josephus. But he said, according to the legends of the craft, these are not the pillars that we're talking about here. What does Flavius Josephus have to say? And for people that haven't been listening to the show or just catching up, Josephus was a Roman Jewish historian and military leader. He's best known for writing the Jewish War, and he was born in Jerusalem, and he ends up getting captured by the Romans, becomes a Roman slave, and ends up writing all the histories of the Jews. And he's got a lot of information that ties into a lot of things that we talk about now, especially with ancient history and what the Jews were talking about their ancient history. And he talks a lot about the war between the Romans and the Jews as well. And that's a big part of his works too. But the histories of the Jews are the history that has been passed down from the beginning of time all the way to his point in time in Rome. He goes into the connections between Adam and the stars, and specifically the knowledge that Adam passes down to Seth. And he also talks about Adam predicted a future flood and fire, and Seth's descendants inscribed the knowledge on two pillars, one of stone and one of brick, to preserve it. So different than the other pillars. So I'm going to suggest something here in a minute when I read from Book 1, Chapter 2, Section 3 of Histories of the Jews from Josephus. Now, Adam, who was the first man and made out of the earth, for our discourse must now be about him, after Abel was slain and Cain fled away on account of his murder, was solicitous for posterity and had a vehement desire of children, he being 230 years old, after which time he lived another 700 and then died. He had indeed many other children, but Seth in particular. He talks about they were also the inventors of that particular sort of wisdom, which is concerned with the heavenly bodies and their order, so astronomy, and that their inventions might not be lost before they were sufficiently known upon Adam's prediction that the world was to be destroyed at one time by the force of fire and at another time by the violence and quantity of water. They made two pillars, talking about he and his son Seth. The one of brick and the other of stone, they inscribed their discoveries on them both, that in case the pillar of brick should be destroyed by the flood, the pillar of stone might remain and exhibit those discoveries to mankind, and also inform them that there was another pillar of brick erected by them. Now, this remains in the land of Syria to this day. So, we got two pillars talked about. Clearly, the Freemasons are trying to blend those pillars together, specifically Anderson and the Anderson theory, which Mackey's against. But I would suggest, and I know I've heard some other writers talk about this too, that there are two pillars. Why wouldn't there be? Why wouldn't there be an inversion of good pillars that were created on the other side, that were manufactured, were to be passed to Noah and his sons when they came out of the flood? And really, just Adam trying to acknowledge this because he knew there was going to be fire and water that would destroy the earth. I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it is either. I'm just saying what I know Josephus wrote, the construction of those pillars are vastly different than ones that are talked about Lamech and his sons created. And what was on those pillars are vastly different too. What's the answer to it? Well, it's highly possible that there were two sets of pillars. And there was good knowledge on the pillars that Adam and his son Seth. And then you've got this 9 vault that obviously Anderson says in the Anderson theory that Enoch hid away, which could have been an Enoch now. Might not be the Enoch that he says it is. Lamech's sons and what they wrote on these pillars and this mysterious golden triangle that's hidden in there as well. It could be that was the inversion of what Adam and Seth had created. And then again, might not be any pillars at all. But I do think there were some pillars, but we won't know exactly who found what. Obviously, according to Freemasons, Solomon found the ones of Lamech, now bogarted later to the good Enoch. Now we've got another Freemasonic character, Sir Andrew Michael Ramsey, and he was born in 1686, and he was commonly called Chevalier Ramsey, and he was a Scottish-born writer who lived most of his adult life in France, and he was a Jacobite. And you know I've talked about the Jacobites a lot in the Agent Crowley series, so go check that out if you want to know what the Jacobites are. And he gave a speech in 1736 in France, and it's considered to be one of the founding texts of Freemasonry in general and of the Masonic tradition in particular. So another very bright mind within Freemasonry and one that we would need to look at that would hold a lot of weight into what Freemasons believe. He wrote a work called The Philosophical Principles of Natural and Revealed Religion in 1749. And in this work, he talks about that the first author of Symbols and Hieroglyphics who taught people sacred mysteries and religious rites was a man. Here we go. He's going to blend these names together. This is where we get the idea of these names blending for the modern Freemason and what's being pushed to the modern Freemason now. The Phoenicians, Thought, T-H-A-U-T, the Greeks, Hermes, the Arabians, Idris, and he believed that Thought or Thoth, Hermes, and Idris were all synonymous, the good Enoch. And he says, all these lived sometime before the universal deluge, and they were all the same man, and consequently some antediluvian patriarch. And lastly, he says, some think that this antediluvian patriarch was Enoch himself. And he goes further into these hieroglyphic symbols that were preserved to pass on these sacred truths, and he called them Enochian symbols. So this is where we get the hieroglyphics that were put on these pillars, supposedly by this good Enoch, bogarted by Freemasons, and now they're called Enochian symbols. So again, I'm not saying they weren't Enochian symbols. They probably were. They probably were Enochian symbols, very similar to what John Dee and Edward Kelley received out in the desert. This is the corruption. This is the trickery that Freemasons started doing. That Albert Mackey said, wait a minute, our earlier craft legends never said this. Why are you guys saying this now? Well, it makes sense why they would save it now. They would try to corrupt who the good Enoch was and say, oh, no, Freemasonry is good, see? And it also plays into the Hebrew meaning, which the word is Chanowk, C-H-A-N-O-W-K, and it actually means consecrated or initiated. So this plays into the evil Enoch. As a matter of fact, it means initiated when it's specifically talking about Cain's son Enoch. So this plays into the idea of the initiate becoming initiated into the mystery schools, into the mysteries. Also, Enoch, according to scriptures, lived 365 years. This is great for the mystic, right? Because this has a mystical meaning, because 365 is what? The number of days in a solar year, which means it's a sacred number. We also know that the letters of the mystical word Abraxas, the Gnostic god, which is the supreme deity, his numerical value in the Greek alphabet is 365. And it's the same with Mithras from Mithraic Mysteries. So we get a lot of overlap when it comes to trying to move this good Enoch into this mystical figure in the mystery religions. And what's interesting is Albert Mackey also goes a little bit further when it comes to Enoch, and he says that Enoch was both idolatrous and a worshiper of the sun. So clearly, he's not talking about the good Enoch, and he makes it clear that the good Enoch has nothing to do with Freemasonry, that is a very modern iteration of where Freemasonry came from. And according to the modern Freemason iterations of Enoch, they talk about their legendary Enoch was well beyond his time in the antediluvian period. They also say that he was considered the founder of the Egyptian religion, which what ties us into Thoth, which ties us into Hermes. And we know that Thoth is the Egyptian god of science and writing, and he was deified by the Egyptians, and he's placed next to Osiris and Isis at that level of stature. Now, we know that Thoth and Hermes are tied together because of the mixture into Hermes Trismegistus as well. And I believe that this also ties into what I've talked about on Old Earth and the King's List with Ubaratutu, who lived for 18,600 years, and he was the last king in the line before the line, then the flood swept over in the Ugaritic text. And in my opinion, and you know I'm an Old Earth creationist, that this was the flood before Adam. So Ubaratutu, who was the giver of knowledge, is directly tied into Thoth, who's also a giver of knowledge. And I believe that that's what this god is. Do these gods get mixed in with these historical human figures all the time? And we know some of these historical human figures aren't actually all the way human either. They are products of fallen angels mixing their DNA with humankind to create these Nephilim. So now to slide into who was Hermes Trismegistus. Was he the thrice greatest, or was he actually three different people? Now, Gary Wayne has posited that he believes he's three different people. I like the concept of three different people, and I'll go into this concept of three different people with the first Hermes Trismegistus that lived before the deluge. He invented writing, and this is where the children of Lamech were able to transcribe these seven sciences onto these pillars that we've talked about in the craft legends. And this Enoch, who constructed nine hidden vaults to protect the seven sciences and this golden triangle, mystical powers. And the idea is that this Enoch is not this good Enoch. This is the Enoch underneath Cain, this evil Enoch. This is the one that Lamech's son Jubal built for Cain, this first city called Enoch. Now you've got a second figure that would give Hermes Trismegistus its second person, which would be Agathodemon, which Agathodemon was traditionally the father of Hermes, and he was originally a lesser deity of classical ancient Greek religion and Greco-Egyptian religion as well. And he's essentially a serpentine god, which will tie into this Brotherhood of the Snake very soon. But he would be this other figure that would tie into Hermes Trismegistus. Now, the third Hermes is thought to be synonymous with Thoth. And we know Thoth is the counselor to Osiris and Isis and the god of science and knowledge in the area of Babel. And Thoth would be more connected into a fallen angel. And the idea that Thoth was the one that started this very mysterious snake order, the Brotherhood of the Snake, which some people think that Thoth could tie also into Azazel. And I know I brought up Ubaratutu, and I suggested in my Old Earth series that Ubaratutu was a fallen angel. And he could have very well been Azazel. And we know that Azazel from Enoch chapter 8 taught a whole lot, specifically when it came to building and war. So this lends to this idea that Thoth is one of the same as Azazel. Now, do we know that for sure? No, but we can look at wisdom and knowledge being imparted. And when we look at Enoch chapter 8, Azazel taught the most out of all the fallen angels that are talked about teaching mankind knowledges. He taught them the most. To get into the Brotherhood of the Snake and its origins and where it came from, it is a society that is said to have existed for over 6,000 years. Where did it start? Well, it's said to have started with Enki, which if you don't know, Enki and Ea are one of the same. Enki is the Sumerian name. Ea is the Akkadian Babylonian name for the god of wisdom, freshwater, creation, crafts, and magic. So this is one of the same. People that are familiar with Sumerian mythology and Enki and Enlil and their battle over mankind, Enki trying to give humankind the knowledges that Enlil won't give them. So this is the tale as old as time, the Satan, Satan, which in most correlations is Enki, is trying to help mankind to break out of this slavery. But Enlil wants to keep them enslaved by not giving them the knowledge. This is where we get the idea of the Demiurge and Yahweh, who is trying to keep us from learning what we were supposed to learn all along. And again, back to the Garden of Eden and the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the allure of knowing everything, right? It's man's biggest downfall, trying to learn all these secret things that we were never meant to learn. And not to say that I think that in earlier times that Adam and subsequently several further down the line from him knew a lot. There were things we weren't meant to learn. And the Satan knew that. And the Satan played on the fact that we have this need to become gods ourselves. And he plays on that. And we know in Sumerian mythology, Enki was often depicted as the benefactor of humanity, bringing us gifts of civilization, knowledge, enlightenment. What does it sound like? Thoth? Sounds like Hermes, Mercury would be another god that would fall in that category. This ties into the idea of Enoch. And I wouldn't even talk about the good Enoch, even though I believe the good Enoch knew a lot. But this evil Enoch who passed down these knowledges to Lamech and subsequently his sons, who they hid these knowledges of Freemasonry to outlast the flood for others who would become the products of people like Noah and his sons who made it through the flood. We know that Enlil, which we talked about, was another Anunnaki god, and he was often seen as Enki's rival, and he opposed Enki giving us the knowledges, feared that it would lead to rebellion and chaos among the humans. So it's back to that order and chaos battle, right? The duality. And it's funny how always in Gnosticism and the occult that Satan is good. He has made himself to be this sympathetic figure, and he is representation of the serpent, because the serpent is a powerful symbol, many cultures. And what does the serpent always embody? Wisdom, rebirth, duality of good and evil, which we just talked about. Even the serpent shedding his skin is a metaphor for transformation, renewal. And that's at the core of these brotherhood teachings, which is said the brotherhood of the snake was started by Enki during Sumerian times. And this goes all the way back, guys, to the Garden of Eden and the Nakash. And we know that Nakash is the Hebrew word that shows up there for snake, but it also is related to hissing, divination, and the shining one. And it's a deceptive creature that was in the Garden of Eden. So again, it's very serpentine. Some believe that the Satan, who was an Nakash, was a seraphim or at least serpentine in nature. And we know the word Nakash shows up several other times in the Bible, and it's not referring to a snake in the sense that we understand. This is more of the shining or bright ones, the illuminated ones. And this ties directly into Enki being the enlightened one, trying to enlighten mankind. And we know the brotherhood of the snake can be traced all the way back to Mesopotamia and a lot of the mythological narratives of the Sumerians. And we know that the brotherhood of the serpent has been seen in various different orders and secret societies. We know that a lot of their teachings were passed down through what? The Gnostics, Rosicrucians, the Freemasons, the Bavarian Illuminati, and most of them have continued this Brotherhood of the Snake's mission of protecting these esoteric knowledges and guiding humanity into spiritual evolution. Now, you will see some people say that those secret societies corrupted the good that Enki or the serpent god was trying to impart on us, which I don't believe in the slightest. I think that's just a sleight of hand because people have become very aware of these secret societies having nefarious ideas for what they want to do with mankind. So instead of us looking at them with, oh, they're here to help us, we don't look at them that way. So now they're saying, oh, wait a minute. No, see, well, the original knowledge is Satan is good. Lucifer's good. We know that the Gnostics embrace the concept of the Gnosis, or what? Secret knowledge. And that connects directly to what the Brotherhood want to do with enlightenment and inner transformation. We know that Rosicrucians, they focus on alchemy and spiritual rebirth, and that parallels the serpent symbolism of renewal, shedding of the skin, which we talked about. And we know that, again, to the evil side of it, that the Brotherhood has been connected to the shadowy cabal that's exerting influence over the world, manipulating political, economic, and social systems behind the scenes. And they use their esoteric knowledge to maintain control and power. Despite all this, you've got a lot of people, specifically Gnostics, even in the New Age, who say that, no, the Brotherhood, they're here to enlighten us. See, what had happened was the Freemasons came along and they corrupted it. And this is what was supposed to happen. But see, no, it came from a negative place from the beginning. It was never good. You cannot make something that's bad good. And that's all that Gnosticism is. And Gnosticism and the occult are one and the same. All of occulted knowledge is the same as the hidden Gnostic knowledge. These occultists, what they believe is exactly many different Gnostic traditions believe. It's one and the same. It's no different. And we can tie this all with a nice bow into the Great White Brotherhood. And what's interesting is, even though that the Great White Brotherhood seems to be, and I've talked about them a lot on the show, the invention of the Theosophical Society with Helena Blavatsky, it was known before that as the Solar or Serpent Brotherhood. And the members were known as serpents, and their temples were pyramids, home of the serpent power, as well as the sun temples aligned with solstices and equinoxes. And we know this through many different secret societies and occult organizations and Gnostic sects. And according to researchers, the Serpent Brotherhood was forced to go underground because of what? Patriarchal religions that were trying to take them out. Gnosticism 101. And again, I'm not for the way that religion has confined God and distorted God by any stretch. What I'm saying is Gnosticism is not the answer either. It's far from it. And I'm expressing that to you fully today. And this Serpent Brotherhood goes underground, and then they start peering their heads out again through the Knights Templar, obviously the Freemasons and Rosicrucians, but they also reappear in the East with the Sufis and the Chinese Taoists and the Tibetan Lamas, which that ties directly into what? The Theosophical Society with Helena Blavatsky, and especially, check this out now, Tantric sects of India, from which the Kundalini masters have come for countless numbers of years. As a matter of fact, the Serpent Brotherhood is focused on how to awaken and develop the Kundalini, the inner serpent power at the base of the spine, through practices of yoga, meditation, and alchemy. These are disciplines, check it out now, originated within the ancient goddess tradition, who first taught these practices on Earth. And according to Hindu records, they were first taught by the Kumaras, who are referred to in ancient records as the patriarchs of yoga and the first teachers of Siddha Marga, the path to perfection. So this is where the Great White Brotherhood spawns right out of, because we know that Helena Blavatsky went to India and learned from these ascended masters, and then comes back and with that knowledge creates Theosophy. This is where we get the idea of the Great White Brotherhood from. And we know the Great White Brotherhood, even though they espouse themselves to be humans who have evolved, who have ascended, we know them to be something else. We know them to be fallen entities that are masquerading. Tale as old as time. But this is the origins of the Brotherhood of the Serpent, the Brotherhood of the Snake, which, from all accounts, Cain's son Enoch had a heavy hand in. And it's interesting, right? The symbolism of the serpent is always connected to these groups in some way, shape, form, or fashion, all the way back to the garden. And I'm very excited to show you how, because I brought in the Great White Brotherhood for a reason, because we're really going to get in the next episode into more of the modern era. And we're going to start combining what happened in the modern era, UFOs with alien abductions. We're going to talk about the modern DNA splicing that I believe is going on behind the scenes and how it ties into the Nephilim, which we talked about in episode one, and this ultra secret society, the Brotherhood of the Snake, and all of the knowledges trickled through Freemasonry and this Great White Brotherhood. Guys, I had a blast today, and I'm very excited to get to part three, because this will culminate this theory of mine. And you can take it with a grain of salt when you hear it, when I break it all the way down, what I think. Or you can take it on board and say, hey, it's a possibility. And again, it's a theory. But I hope I bring enough solid foundation to when I present the idea and you can say, you know what? Maybe. All right, guys. Again, had a blast today. Look forward to seeing you next week. If you can, if you haven't done it, please go give a 5-star review on any platform that you're on. Go write a review if you're on Apple Podcasts. If you're on YouTube, go write a comment, like it, subscribe, share the show. It's as simple as that. And on the way out, guys, we're going to play my single, Joel's Psalm. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
Songs and the pain is cold, but seasonally, I'm crying, looking for signs. I need a theophany, everything encompassing me, isotropically. And nothing I seem to do is working out. Who is spotting me? I feel like they're mocking me. Where is the God in me? I feel like I'm dried up. Hominy, and all I want is Christ, not theology. People are nitpicking, bickering over the Bible while people are dying in front of them. And you wonder why people are running from the God that you say that is shunning them. I felt it myself. They told me to look somewhere he's not. Up in the stars, up in the sky, up in the clouds, like he's not around. So I empty myself with every distraction. Got driving my tires, a ball can't get any traction. Where's compassion? We following kings, but they only from Akron. Whoa, I just know that we're more than what they tell us. We're overzealous when we protect what is precious. We get confused and those things start to propel us into things we don't want to do, leave us helpless. There's only one who gives us peace when we are restless. I know that now.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling. But when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to GhostBed. GhostBed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every GhostBed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? GhostBed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, GhostBed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. GhostBed, the coolest beds in the world.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No